is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint Presents.
Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. This is Malcolm Outlaw. Well, we're here with our 10-part series, friends, and immigration is the topic today. A nation's sovereignty versus human compassion. This is an exciting 10-part series. We're taking up some of the biggest topics of our generation, really. Things like immigration, the Orwellian state, elections, gun control, climate change, terrorism, the deep state, all kinds of things. And let's jump into the topic today. I'd like to introduce the panel and welcome, please. Dr. Stephen Steinleit is here, Holly McKay, Dennis Santiago. I'll tell you more about those folks just a bit later in the program, friends. Let's get started and talk about a nation of immigrants. I hear that a lot from folks. We're a nation of immigrants. We're actually a nation of citizens, really. I beg to differ sometimes. But so what's the problem? So we're a nation of 340 million people or so, right? Depending on what day of the week it is, I guess. So what's the problem with another 22 million immigrants and a million or two a year more is the big question. You know I'm going to you first, Dr. Steinleit.
Well, let me just begin by saying that if we continue at the present state of 1.2 approximately legal and anywhere between 400 and 600,000 illegal, we will hit about a half a billion well before the end of this century. It's just something people need to understand. The tax on our infrastructure, on our biosustainability, and what we're able to do as a society, on our social safety welfare, on our social welfare net, all of these things are powerful and potentially catastrophic. And I think that we need to look at immigration, first of all, I think to without tears in our eyes, and I'm a first-generation American. Mm-hmm. I think we need to look at immigration without tears and say, immigration is not an absolute good. It is not an end in itself. It's a social policy, like any other social policy. And the question is whether it serves the needs of the nation, and yes, whether it meets our humanitarian aspirations as a nation at a given time. I would say right now that our immigration policy is ruinously generous. I would also add to that that our refugee policy, at least as defined by President Trump, is meager. He's dropped the ceiling number to 30,000, and one is dependent on the other. If we can fix our immigration policy, we can be more generous when it comes to refugee policy. Again, though, let's define refugee policy. It doesn't mean people coming for a better life, although that's extremely understandable and sympathetic. And by the way, the great majority of these people in the caravan are not bad people. They're good people. They just want to live better. On the other hand, we live in a tragic, anarchic world, much of which could be defined by those qualities. And if we were allowing those qualities to dictate our policy, we would have to take the entire universe here.
All right. So, and this is a problem not just America is struggling with. It's a problem that the world is struggling with. I mean, we're seeing what's happening in Europe. We're seeing it's really all over the world. We're seeing this migrants and the move of people. Dennis, pick up, if you would, where Dr. Steinleit was. He had a great, great opening statement and some really significant points there. But the question that people really need to ask themselves is this sustainable? When he pulls out the numbers, I mean, again, tear in the eye, compassion on one side, who are we? What kind of citizenry are we that we're not going to open up our borders versus are we going to pull the entire playing field down, Dennis? That really is the big question, isn't it?
If you look at the history of immigration in the United States, mm-hmm. there was a wave, the previous wave. It typically peaks at about 15% of the population when you have a big wave. And the last time there was a big wave was in the 1860s. And during that period, the big wave was the beginning of the entry of Central or Eastern and Southern Europeans into the United States. And it peaked at about 15%. You know, there were fewer people in the U.S. at the time, but there was it was tumultuous. If you look at the immigration wave that's happening right now, guess what the percentage of the population is that it's currently at as it stresses the society of the United States? 15%, exactly the same as it was the last wave. The difference is this wave is not coming from anywhere in Europe. It's coming from Asia and Latin America. So it's a bit more visible. The last one was visible too. People could tell the difference between Southern Europeans and Northern Europeans who were way before them. But when you really look at it, you know, this has happened in the United States before. We've gone through these stresses before. We survived the stresses the last time. I don't see any reason we're not going to survive these stresses.
Well, part of the thing you say there that we will cover today is assimilation, how that happened back then, Dennis, compared to what's happening now. Because what's happening is a lot of these groups are setting up mini countries within a country. I mean, that's part of the problem we're having here is a lot of these folks are not assimilating with the citizenry of being American. Holly, you know, I was thinking here coming into the program today that being an American is unique. It's different. You know, really, you got to think about this through when you're French, you're Spanish, you're Hispanic, there's a ancestry thread that runs through you. When you're an American, we're like, really, I mean, you think about it, break it down, Holly, we're like a mutt. I mean, we really are the mutt of the world, are we not?
Absolutely. And I think you could make the argument that almost all countries in the world are nations of immigrants to some level. But I think what the U.S. has is it has this incredible value of human life that is really unique and really special. And I think we should never lose that. And when we look at these immigration policies, especially when it comes to asylum seekers and refugees, it's always important to sort of keep that in mind, because that's really what makes the U.S. special, is that it is the most generous country in the world. However, I think that we can't devise our policies based on emotion or fear. It really has to be practicality. And we have to be able to adapt to the reality of the world we live in and not the reality that we want to live in. If you do look around the world, it's 60 million people that are being displaced and on every faction of the globe. And this it's a huge problem, and it's coming from every direction.
Yeah. You know, as you say that, Holly, we put out this brand, I was thinking, that is America. It's a brand of attraction, as you say. We're compassionate people. It's the land of opportunity. It's dreams. And we put out, that's our brand. That's the American brand. That's
absolutely.
Right. This American dream. What do you think they all want from Central America, Holly?
Sure. So, I mean, it's very complicated. And I always go back to international law, and the most vulnerable need to be identified, and that is how the system has worked and how the system should work. And we've seen that break down a little bit, particularly, you know, in the case of Central America. None of us can speak for 7,000 people. But I think it's important that there is no blanket human right to settle in another country, however difficult it is economically. So it's really important to distinguish between a genuine asylum seeker who is under persecution and really in fear of their life, and somebody who may be living an awful life and can't find work, but they're migrating for economic reasons. And that, unfortunately, is not covered by international law. And I think it's really important that we distinguish those, and not everyone seeking asylum has equal grounds to asylum.
That's the struggle.
Back, and we all... Yeah, and every person on each side of this, whether you are the asylum seeker, and as we're seeing people rush the border and try to sneak in, you know, we all need to respect what that is, and that's not okay. And then on the other side, we also need to look at it, you know, from a rational center and not driven by emotion, but again, go back to identifying who are the most vulnerable, because that's where our obligation is to protect, not to protect everybody coming here for a better life, because unfortunately we don't live in an ideal world, and that's the reality.
Well, no, the world is less than ideal. I mean, when you look at the entire population of the world, most of the world is in poverty. Most of the world is making couple dollars a week. I mean, they're in poverty, and this is all throughout the world. So we are. That's why people say, well, America is one of the richest or the richest country in the world, and I mean that may be, but we're losing it. We're losing the edge, I guess, is what I would say. Listen, here's the thing. Immigration, the topic we're talking about right now today, this is the single biggest conversation and topic that will impact your life. And a lot of people tend to turn the conversation off or not want to pay attention. Now, here's the problem, people. Over the last, 20, 30, 40 years, our politicians have bungled it. They've dropped the ball on this. This is both Democrats and Republicans as a whole. They've dropped the ball on immigration. And that's why we have no answers. This has been an ongoing problem that has kind of come to a feverish pitch here under the Trump administration. Partly because he made it a big part of his campaign, he made a big part of what he was elected on, and now we're dealing with what we're dealing with, and it seems to be at this, this really high intensity. People are really juiced about immigration, and passion runs high on all sides of the aisle. So let me do some formal introductions now. Looking forward to this conversation today, friends, on immigration here. So Dr. Steven Steinle, he's a senior policy analyst at the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. He's one of the nation's leading authorities on immigration's trends, policies, and the politics behind it all. And one thing about it is Dr. Steinle knows these things from the back of his hands. Every time I talk to him, I learn something for sure. Holly McKay, she's covered conflicts and crises in more than 20 countries around the world. I always love Holly because you're so practical, and yet when you add the practicality to the intellectual value you bring to a conversation, it's exciting to have you join us. She's a 12-year investigative and war reporter for Fox News Digital. Currently, she's on the front lines down in the Central American area, as we were talking about in doing this broadcast now. And our panel continues with Dennis Santiago. Dennis is a columnist and a featured commentator here on America Out Loud. He's a global risk and financial analyst. His subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. We have an exciting conversation here. You can hear this already. So here's what we'll do. So, some of what I want to talk about, we'll get to the humanitarian side now. And what I want to pose to everybody is this humanitarian side and cost of immigration. Let's compare and contrast. I kind of stepped back a little bit and said, might this be an opportunity? Is that potentially a way to look at this? Now, you might look back at me and say, what are you talking about, Malcolm? Well, might it be an opportunity? This whole what's happening around the world right now to put some things in order. I mean, let's take that up next, Frank.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's americaoutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. So this was something I've been wanting to do for a while, friends. And I thought as we come into a new year, this would be a perfect opportunity here. We're closing in on a momentous year and program of our life here, 2020. Maybe we'll see 2020 for once, huh? Maybe clear vision. That'd be something we can look forward to, huh? So this was an opportunity to do this. This is why we put this series together, Viewpoint Presents. We hope you enjoy and tell folks about it here. Today we have Dr. Steven Steinle here, Holly McKay, Dennis Santiago as we take on immigration here. All right, the humanitarian side and cost of immigration. I want to come back and talk about the immigrants that are coming to America. When you think about a lot of these people, as Holly was just saying prior to the break here, are these people coming for a better life or are they fleeing oppression? And does it matter whether they come legally or illegally? Because as you were stating the numbers, Dr. Steinle, when we opened up, you have about 1.2 million, you say, and about another 500,000-700,000 illegal. So you're talking a couple of million a year, more or less. Is that sustainable? But again, are they coming? Why are they, they're all coming for the American dream, I'm assuming, Dr. Steinle. I think that's why people are trying to get to America. And they're putting themselves at risk. They're putting their lives at risk. The cartels are involved in this there, and there's a lot of money flowing down there as they continue to push through the border, and you see people falling all over the wall and hurting themselves and kids and families, and which, of course, the media and the cameras are out to catch all that in a heartbeat, Dr. Steinle. But how do you take immigration and not have a tear in your eye? That's the first problem that Americans are going to have a hard time with, Dr. Steinle. Yeah?
Yeah, well, I think it's an issue that does divide the head and the heart. So that, you know, for example, you know, the tremendous anguish and outcry over the separation of families, which was in a way, you know, almost an inevitable part of trying to impose some kind of order on immigration in the absence of a wall, in the absence of strong border control, with that insane decision of some years ago that, you know, you can't keep a kid in jail for 20 days without his parents. And, you know, so all of these things happen. And now if you ask Americans, do they want large immigration to continue? Resoundingly no. In fact, immigration policy is one of the great failures of American democracy.
There
was
failure.
A poll done by CAPS, you know, the Center for Political Studies at Harvard, done in conjunction with one of our largest polling companies. 76% of the American people, and this is right across the board, mm-hmm. you know, ethnically, religiously, and so on, want it cut in half. So it's very clear what the American people
But the politicians
want.
Are not listening to that, Stephen. They're
no,
not.
No, because they want the water open.
So why don't they want a wall? Answer me this. What are they afraid of with a wall? What are they afraid of with a wall?
I think the Republicans are afraid that their cronies will lose cheap labor, and the Democrats certainly don't want to lose a constituency which they think is going to make them the permanent majority party. I think it's just as cold and raw as that. The escalators of what upward social and economic mobility are broken. We are no longer a great manufacturing society with jobs at all levels for people, unskilled, semi-skilled, skilled. We are no longer a society of small farms. In other words, the skills that people bring who are coming from places like Central America, most of whom don't have a ninth grade education, many of whom are functionally illiterate in both English and Spanish, they are going to stay at the bottom of the well.
But now the cards are changed entirely, which Dr. Stanley points out. We no longer have this capability anymore, which, of course, Trump ran on that as well, Holly, trying to bring that back to America. But what about that? How does that impact all of this with these immigrants trying to get in here to the land of dreams here?
Look, again, I always go back to what the law is, and that is based on identifying, in terms of humanitarian issues, it's about identifying the most vulnerable. And often the most vulnerable probably are the poorest, mm-hmm. or are the most impoverished, or haven't had the education opportunities. And I would never want to sort of discriminate somebody based on, you know, whatever opportunity that they had in life. It really comes down to whether their life is at risk or it's not. And that's where I think the law comes in. Again, you know, and on the other side, it's not wrong for any citizen of any country to want to know there are strong border mechanisms in place, mm-hmm. to want to know that there's a strong system, and nobody from any country should be crossing a border illegally or attempting to. Every single person crossing into another country seeking asylum should be going through the process and registering.
And of course they're not. And they're not too. All right, I like the way you say, Holly, the way you identify asylum. I really respect what you just put out there, because you're saying what you're trying to do is just define what asylum means. That, you know, asylum is if you really are being oppressed, if your life is at risk and there is danger. But crossing multiple countries to get to another country, to take a journey or a backpack or an even and out, is not exactly what we would call a proper asylum. And then, as you
Absolutely.
Say, then they ram the border.
That behavior is inappropriate, no matter how desperate you are. There is a process in place, and each side of it needs to respect that process. And I think, you know, again, you can look at the sort of Central American issue and say, well, why didn't you go down to Costa Rica if your life is really in danger? Or why didn't you stop in Mexico? And, you know, there are many arguments to be made on that, and very valid arguments to be made on that issue as well. But okay. But you know, again, it is important when identifying these cases is really identifying the difference between an economic migrant and a genuine asylum seeker, refugee.
And that's the difference. I mean, there are those who want, again, a better way of life, but there's a purpose to going through this in a legal way. That really is the big argument we're having here in the States here. You know, there was an interesting video, guys, I seen the other day. And I don't know if any of you have ever seen this. World Poverty, Immigration, and Gumballs. Have anybody ever see this? It's by the
Oh, yes, of course.
Numbers USA. Numbers USA, yeah. very interesting. I don't know if you, Dennis, Holly, if you've seen it, but I'm going to put the links right in the post in the program here. But here's what I want to point out. Dennis, I want to go to you on this, and let's bring this up to everybody here. And here's what I'm thinking. What's pointed out in this video, and the reason I bring up the video is this. If we take from these countries the best of the best, as many people point out, we should want the best of the best. If you're going to take immigration, you want to take the best people. The problem is you're taking the best people from these countries. These are the people who, you know, do want to further themselves, who do maybe have some sort of education, who do want to get ahead, who are incentivized. And then you're leaving behind the people that are not incentivized, who don't really know anything different or want to better their lives. The problem then becomes that, that just multiplies back in these countries. They're never going to get any better. And then, Dennis, when you take a look at that, I've been thinking about this a lot. You take a look at some of these countries, and they all got ruthless dictators and evil people that are controlling the countries, that are keeping the people where they want for their own power and greed. Now you've got the worst of the worst there. Why, if you take the best of the best, it's a problem the world is not really looking at, I think, in a very authentic way.
It's kind of interesting that you point that out, because here's – when you look at the stresses that are happening in the United States and having to do with economic stresses, mm-hmm. and the complaints about immigrants taking the best jobs and basically putting the lowest economic strata of Native Americans, which at this point turn out to be poor whites and poor blacks, under stress, here's where it really comes from. It's not immigrants. If you look at the numbers of people that are in the United States that are non-immigrant status, mm-hmm. aliens with work visas, that's a very large number. Did you understand, when we look at the numbers of people in the U.S., there's 300 some million of us. Mm-hmm. There's 181 million non-immigrant aliens in the United States at any given time. And that about 77 million of them come in a year. About 60 some are here under pleasure. The rest of them are under work visas. And these are the best of the best that you say. They're not immigrants. These are authorized people that are in the United States taking some of the best jobs that we have and creating, filling the demand for the jobs in such a way that it causes, from an economic standpoint, the lack of demand for our own people to rise up to where they can fill those jobs because they're filled by somebody else. That's a policy that I question. It has nothing to do with immigrants. It has to do with non-immigrants.
I think there's no question that Dennis is making a valid point. I mean, you couldn't survive in a New York City hospital without the help of superb Filipino nurses and doctors from India and Bangladesh and Korea. We've got some of the best of the best are here already. It's not so much they're taking jobs away. The fact is that the future is going to mean vastly fewer jobs for everybody here. There are very bright people writing mm-hmm. right now right. about to sustain our society, we're going to have guaranteed income by the federal government. So are we in a position to take in tens of millions of mostly impoverished people into a society where work as we understand it may become a vanishing entity in, say, 30 years?
You take a look at the world as a whole, and we're not doing the job we should be doing. I mean, that's what I see. And then when you say, well, is that our problem? I have a hard time with this, and I think this is something we need to chew over here. I'm not a globalist per se, but I'm not. But yet, I think it's a problem where a lot of people want to close the door and they want to say, well, I don't want to deal with that. The hell with it. Just turn it off because it's not my problem. I just wonder where this whole thing is, Holly. Where's the church in all of this? Where are the leaders in this? Is it time for a planet task force? And I'm not talking about the United Nations, because they suck. Now, I'm talking about, is it time to get smart people together in a room and figure this thing out?
Absolutely. I think we have a tendency to say it's the U.S. has an immigration crisis or Europe has an immigration crisis, and the spotlight is on those countries and our country. But the real crisis is in the country where these people are coming from. And unless you really want to go to the root causes and work collectively to try to look at this, then the problems are only going to get worse. People really aren't going to get deterred by long waits for asylum or separation of mother and child at the border. So we have to be really practical about it. We have to go to the root causes, and we have to look at why these people are leaving their countries. And it really is those governments, and somehow we need to be able to have a collective response. And I think in a case like this, you know, isolationism and sort of this fragmentation, it doesn't really work. Countries need to come together. Europe needs to work with this, to work with Canada. Countries need to come together to kind of look at how we can address these root problems and look at prevention. Somewhere like Syria, you know, we could have looked at that and gotten together and focused on something that was centered more on a prevention or stopping it in the early stages, and then these immigration crises wouldn't have happened to the scale it has. I know it's easy to say in hindsight, but that's the reality, is you've got to go to the root causes of why people are leaving.
Well, and the root causes, we're not really addressing that at all. As I look around the world and I see some of the problems that we're having in a lot of these countries, we're not addressing the root cause. Again, I think it comes back to the lowest denominator in all of these factors are typically dictators, evil people who are running the country, especially in these Central American countries and South American countries, and the people have nothing there. They have no quality of life. They have no jobs. They have no quality living whatsoever, and they want out. And that's what's happening, Dennis, and they see America as the dream, the American dream, the land, and that's the brand we've put out there, so everybody wants their stake in the dream. You're getting some of these caravans, by the way, at the border, who are demanding. There were actually meetings where they had a list of demands that they were on a press conference. It's insane. These are criminals, for God's sakes. Yeah, that's what I would say. Yet they have demands. There's an expectation out there. There's an expectation that they have a right as a human being to the American dream. What do you say to that, Dennis?
Well, it's kind of interesting, you know, because I also hear anecdotes from Central America that the people that have joined these caravans sold everything that they had to make this journey to the U.S. and or to the border, and they're presently stuck. And I think paid a lot of the money that they had over to the people that were arranging this. I've heard that in Central America, where the governments down there, the Central American governments, other than Venezuela, have actually been rising in terms of their GDP over the past decade. And one of the things that they're doing is when these people come back, because they basically have lost everything, is they take care of them until they can get back on their feet, you know, to the extent that they can. So, if you really look at this, you know, you say, you know, what's the international body that should really be taking a look at Latin America?
Yeah.
It's the Organization of American States. It's a very old organization that is designed for the Western Hemisphere. It's been dormant for a very long time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the place it should start. I think it should start with the United States, Canada, and Mexico leading the charge, getting the South American countries that are in good shape to come join and go solve this problem in the Western Hemisphere. There is a solution that I think that the U.S. administration could lead if Washington could get its act together and stop being acrimonious about who gets what and why for myopic reasons.
I have grave doubts about the OAS. I mean, we're talking about an organization of countries which are very, very different in many cases in terms of their political structures, their economic desires. I think to make a radical comment, you know, let's be frank, a lot of the problems in Central America are caused by the United States of America. Mm-hmm. We toppled democratically elected regimes. Mm-hmm. Take our bends in Guatemala. I mean, we ran, you know, some of the most exploitative industries. The banana industry could go on and on and on. We were an historic villain there for a very long time. With the big stick and running the economies of these societies. So, you know, if you want to say that we have, in some respects, a debt to pay, mm-hmm. I would say, yeah, that's arguable morally. I would say, you know, clearly these are societies that, for the most part, are failed. These are mostly failed states. These are states that have virtually no honest, open civil society institutions. The police are corrupt. The military are corrupt. The courts are corrupt.
That's the problem.
I don't know who goes and does that. I mean, I like the idea of Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. because you know, all those societies give, you know, are...
Well, they're civilized, Mexico, at least. I mean...
Yeah, and right. they're reasonably democratic. I mean,
well,
we
you
are
know,
in Canada.
Stephen,
that's reasonably democratic.
All right. I could see, though, President Trump pulling together Mexico and Canada and having a conversation back to that. Holly, I want you to take a moment for me, please. And you're down that way right now. You're on assignment down there. Speak to me about what your sense is. I mean, let's not lose sight of... What are you feeling down there? What's the sense of what you you feel from the people down there, and how do they reflect on this current problem we're having on the Mexico-United States border?
Well, my sort of current focus while I'm here is Venezuela. And, you know, what's really remarkable, I'm visiting sort of the surrounding countries as well, is really how Colombia, how Brazil, how Ecuador, how Chile, how Peru have really come together to really support the Venezuelan people and really understanding what the predicament they're in is. And there are a lot of mechanisms in place. Almost, I would say, the problem is there are so many layers of bureaucracy with these things. Mm-hmm. You have UN bodies like UNHCR, you have IOM, you have the government, you have so many moving parts that that's almost part of the problem, I think, in trying to come up with some kind of cohesive solution.
Here's what I want everybody to think about next is there's a lot of conversation again about when you don't agree with these things, you're considered a racist. Back to what I just said, guys, that, okay, there are a lot of great people down there. These countries, absolutely they are. Do they deserve a better life? Sure they do. I mean, but is America the land where everybody is going to migrate to or try to break into is the question you have to ask yourself. And furthermore, what does that do to our standard of living? That really is what you got to look at here, people. Where are the solutions in all this? What does the future bring as we turn the tide here in immigration in this problem? And again, you can see you talk about a wall. Trump is up against a wall right now when it comes to trying to get some sort of proper legislation. You know, again, it comes back to those, we call them Republicrats or Democans. It's one of the same people. They're the same party. They're both corrupt. Stay right there. We'll have more Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
We're back, friends, and Viewpoint Presents. It's Malcolm Out Loud here, and we're having, a conversation on immigration here. Dr. Stephen Steinleit is here, Holly McKay, Dennis Santiago. And you've been hearing some of the conversation as we talk about a lot of these countries. We just had a conversation about Venezuela. You don't hear much about Venezuela, clearly. They're having a lot of the same problems, clearly, as Guatemala and Honduras, Colombia, all these countries. It's a sad state of affairs. Dennis, you mentioned the OAS. So you mentioned, again, a lot of people are, you know, the United Nations has lost their flavor, their muster here. And the OAS is not even existent, really. And I'm just looking for a task force of some sort. You know, I wonder what it would take to do that if the president, you know, I look at these kinds of problems as we need to get big minds on them. We need to get big people to think. But then the problem is, Dennis, even if we come up with the answers, how do we get the politicians to come together to solve our problems? I mean, they don't seem to be willing to do that because, as you all pointed out, or Stephen pointed out, the Republicans, you know, they're in it for their own reasons, for their business connections and the people to work. And the Democrats are looking for voters. What the hell do we do?
Well, we have to get beyond the myopia of domestic politics. I mean, domestic politics is always, you know,
messy.
It is messy, and it always will be. It does not mean that because you have messy domestic politics that you can ignore your international commitments. You know, those are had traditionally been two separate things. They've been blended into a soup, an ugly soup by mostly the mainstream media, trying to use everything they can because they don't happen to like the current administration, which is, in the end, if you really think about it, a silly reason to do all this stuff. I mean, like, we have to understand that, immigrants, legal immigrants to the United States contribute a lot to this country. I mean, just think of it. If it weren't for legal immigration, Stephen's ancestors would not have come here at the beginning of the 20th century. And you know, there wouldn't be first-generation immigrants like myself and first-generation immigrants like Holly McKay, who are, you know, I mean, there's a reason we're the people contribute. And I think everybody that comes to this country wants to give back. It's not the freeloaders that the we have them, but we also have the other, and you know, we kind of lose sight of the good that we get bad that we see.
I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think everybody that you the statement you just made that people that come to this country, you said that you believe they all want to give back. See, I don't believe that at all. In fact, the current state is that 70% of them are on welfare.
Well, the current state is that it's not just 70% of them are on welfare. Mm-hmm. You've got high welfare. Fair rates in all of the urban states of America have these fantastically high welfare conditions that are being pushed by people that seem to want to go in the direction of a socialist state for urban America. You know, that's a big domestic problem that we're not dealing with either. You know, so it's not like we don't have lots of warts in this country that we need to get on with simultaneously, which is what makes it hard because, you know, everybody can't, which one do I deal with first? You know, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. But in the case of the conversation we're having now, the real solution to it is to stem the flow. You know, you got to stop it at the source. People are going to continue to want to come here because where do you run to? You could either run to Brazil and Argentina,
right,
or you could run north to Mexico, the United States, and Canada.
Okay.
But you can't stay where you are. All right. And North and South America have to figure this out
if the numbers are real, if they and we'll have Stephen comment on that in a minute. He knows the numbers better than most. But if it is 7 out of 10 that are on some sort of wealth, you're a collecting. I mean, take a moment, and Stephen, and let's educate people on the drain to the system, because we started in talking about can the system. I mean, what's a solution for this? I mean, the drain on the system has got to be incredible.
It's colossal.
Colossal.
I mean, illegal immigration itself is estimated to cost something like 300 and somewhere in the middle, 300 and something billion dollars a year. We're talking about $1 trillion every several years, and then people, it's really funny. We get into this idiotic debate about the cost of a border wall that would be 25. It's a drop in the bucket compared to what the system is costing. And yes, three quarters of immigrant families with children are on at least two major welfare programs. And this is a real problem. Even someone as far on the left as Paul Krugman, Nobel Prize winning guy at the New York Times, that we cannot afford this level of impoverished immigration without gutting, in the end, without seeing the demise of Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. Those are pretty powerful words. I mean, if those systems collapse, you're talking about a social revolution in this economy. These are expectations that American citizens have. And by the way, so insane is our present immigration system that we're providing Social Security to immigrants.
It's crazy.
Who've never paid a dollar into the system over their lives.
It's all crazy, Stephen.
So many things that are
you
so
can't make any sense out of any of it. Yeah, you can't make any sense out of it. Let me talk to you about assimilation a moment here, Stephen, because look at the history of the country. People came here and they learned our language. They accepted the way of life of what it was to be an American. Now what's happening is everybody, you've got these communities charities that are being set up within communities. They're really countries within a country. And you're seeing mm-hmm. that in a lot of cultures now where they want to bring their country, and they get upset when you don't buy into their country. In fact, they get physically, not only distraught, Stephen, but they get, I think, violent about it. If you don't accept the fact, then you're, and if you don't, by the way, you're considered a racist. That's the word that's thrown around immediately. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, look, if you haven't been called a racist at some point or another, you know, you're not a person who has any opinions. But the fact is, some of this is just, by the way, the things that happen because of objective circumstances. Mm-hmm. If we say, for example, you know, and some people said, you know, we're based essentially birthing a second Mexico, Central America in the United States. The reason for that is that when people assimilated more readily, if we're talking about, say, the great waves mm-hmm. From Europe,
right.
It was because of the diversity of the immigration. Immigration was enormously diverse in the waves that ended in 1924. They came from all over Europe. And yes, the system was racist. You know, we had Chinese exclusion laws and all of those kinds of things. Numbers of Jews and Eastern Europeans was kept down very, very low till the very end. But meanwhile, you had people coming from all over. You really had a tremendous mix of cultures. Since the reopening of immigration in 65, with the passage of that Nationality Act, right. Mexico, for example, which now, of course, is no longer the number one sender, Central America and China have taken that role over.
Mm-hmm, right.
But for nearly 40 years, Mexico so predominated the immigration flow that the eight next sending countries didn't equal the number for Mexico. So when you end up getting a huge, huge number mm-hmm. of folks mm-hmm. from one country or one culture,
whatever it is, right?
Yes, it does
changes
represent
the culture.
It represents a problem for social cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it.
Yeah.
It can't be denied.
It can't be denied. And that's kind of what we're having now, I see. Dennis, you're out in Los Angeles area, but all along that southern border, you've got major influx of the Hispanic population coming into a lot of these markets. What is that doing in your, I mean, talk to me a minute on, really, in real terms, all of these cities and states down there, because I hear a lot of talk about Arizona. People are upset with Arizona for a lot of reasons. So how does that all change?
It's kind of interesting if you look at it historically. What it changes is it sets the clock for this part of the United States, this is the southwestern part of the United States, back to where it was about 150 years ago. Back then, you really think about it.
When Texas was almost Mexico, you mean?
When Texas was Mexico,
exactly.
And California was Mexico.
I mean, almost permanently, for permanent, you know, they had not.
Yes,
right?
The big battles of the middle 1800s, mm-hmm. in the 19th century in this part of the country was between, you know, if you go to school in California, one of the things that you still learn is that the war between the Californios and the Californians, which are the Californians being the faction of the United States and the Californios being the faction of Mexico. And these things that, you know, what goes around comes around. And basically by the change in immigration flow, what has happened is that old wounds that were kind of glossed over because of the Industrial Revolution have resurfaced as cultural questions about the identity of how this part of the country is, and it's very different from the matrix of cultures that exist in either the breadbasket parts of the United States or the eastern part of the United States, which tend to have a much more European matrix and mixture in them. This is really, it's always been this way. The rest of the country now gets to see it play out in terms of what's going on, but from a historical standpoint, if you look at it objectively, this is same old, man.
Clearly, the culture / political conflict, yes, it's never gone away. It's reasserting itself. It's latent. It's reasserting itself. But there's also, I think, a more immediate impact, and that is there's a tremendous outflow of people from California now because the tremendous inflow of poor folks from Mexico has made California the state with the greatest disparity in wealth in the country. That takes us back 150 years, too.
Right.
It also takes California schools, which used to be number one, to number 48 in the country. It's had a whiplash effect on many institutions in the state, including its economy.
I agree. Yeah, if you look at that, one of the side effects of what's going on here, taking the clock back from a cultural mixing and assimilation standpoint, is it has turned the, while it's a very rich economic state with, you know, a lot of, it's a part of the world that has a lot of money, but culturally, it's begun to act more like a third world state that
right.
And you know, and
which
that
we've addressed.
I think we're still learning to address the repercussions.
Well, we've addressed that on the platform, the fact of the third world status of a lot of us. But I'm going to point real something quickly out about California as well, Dennis, is that I've been hearing a lot of talk, again, within these caravans and within these migrant communities and everything that's what they're looking for specifically and what they all know, back to the dream or the American dream. It's really the California dream. What they're looking for is to get, they know they have a better shot at getting in California than anywhere else, Texas, Arizona, anywhere else is California, because they know California is a sanctuary state. They know they can get safe haven there. They know that the politicians have opened arms to their poverty needs, and that's where they're trying to get into. That's the word on the street that I'm hearing. What do you say about that?
Well, I think you're entirely correct in that the political matrix in California, which, by the way, is now controlled by the Californians out of their base in San Francisco, which is where this all began, by the way.
That's how California became
a state, which is kind of ironic.
Yeah, it's being controlled out of their basement. It's like voodoo witch doctor stuff, I got to tell you, man. Come on. And then they just the Democrat Party, they just bought over the Orange County. Look what they just did to Orange County and the corruptness there to get the Republicans out of there, Dennis. I mean, come on.
But by the same token, you know, if when you live here, you also get to see this stuff up close, and you can see that one of the big schisms, you know, this is brown on brown, right? You know, the people that are here that are from Mexico, and if you watch gang problems in California, it's gang used to be drug driven, now it's culture driven as far as who the factions are, and it's Mexicans versus Central Americans is what's happening. So you're seeing these things play out in other kinds of microcosms, very similar, if you really think about it, to Italians versus Irish but these things are repeating themselves. One of the things that we do not do well in this country is think about assimilation from a constructive standpoint. We complain about it, but we don't do anything about making it better as a policy. And it's because our domestic politics is so stuck in Washington, D.C., unable to see anything outside their own, rear ends.
All right. Taking a look at all of this right now, I mean, you take a look at, I think we just talked about California as a piece of this. I mean, you know, the brand and the message they put out as a sanctuary state is evil to the entire country, what's happening there. And now you see all these migrants. And again, part of the brand that they all know, people, is that they just want to get to California. They think California is their saving grace. You have to question and say, what is the future hold for California? How does that relate to the nation? And why are the politicians so bent on what they're doing out there, and really what many of us believe is destroying not only the state, but the country as a whole? So you got to question that. That's a piece of this thing. It's a piece of this thing. This whole conversation about the wall, whether the wall will ever go up or not. I don't know whether you all think the wall really becomes a practical, and the wall isn't going to stop it all either. You know, it's going to do some part of it. But, Stephen, it takes a combination of technology. It takes a combination of troops and, you know, the Homeland Security. It takes a combination of that and dollars and, I guess, a structure. But right now there's a wall, and they're climbing over the damn wall or trying to scale it or do all kinds of things. So, what is the future
It also requires, I think, you know, long-range thinking about how we deal with, you know, I'm going to get back to that, but how we deal with, and I think it's all related, you know, the fact that we have I mean, I don't buy the Pew Center's figures that, you know, it's gone down from 12 million to 10. Mm-hmm. Yale and MIT just came out with a study saying it's probably 20 to 30 million illegal aliens here already.
Exactly.
I think what we need, first of all, is we need a wall. We need a wall, and we need a narrower gate into the country. We need a wall to keep out folks, and we also need a gate to let them in. We need a grand bargain between the political parties. And one of the things, and I probably wouldn't have said this some years ago, mm-hmm. I believe that it's impossible. It would go run against the national our values as Americans. We know politically that Americans are very uncomfortable with it. I think morally, it's nuts. If people have been here, I don't know, we have to come up with a figure or something. We cannot, mass deportation is off the table. It's not going to happen,
right.
And we shouldn't be talking about it.
Right.
It creates fear, and it breeds enormous hostility and terror.
But yet, Stephen, as you have to admit, that's got to be used for leverage, and they are trying to use it.
Yeah, it has to be used for leverage. Right. That's the second part,
right.
Is that the deal we make, mm-hmm. is we say to the Democrats, okay, mm-hmm. those 22 million, whatever that number is, most of them, by the way, who've been here for a long time, right. haven't committed any crimes, they've worked at jobs, they've paid taxes, they've contributed to the society. I can't tell you how many friends I have here in the city, work in restaurants, work in construction jobs. I know they're illegal. They're wonderful people. They broke an immigration law, and I'm not happy about that. I believe in the rule of law.
Okay, so you're saying give them access give them access to the American dream, you're saying, right?
I say yes. I mean, there are questions. Some people have said,
right.
you know, the group that came in that way shouldn't be given the vote. I don't agree with that, only because it's not, as a practical matter, there will immediately be a massive civil rights movement to see that they get the vote, and they'll get the vote. But what we do need then is we need mandatory E-Verify. You know, we need a wall. Mm-hmm. We need all of those things.
Okay. What do you think about a grand bargain? Can we get a grand bargain?
Yes, I think we can, and I think we have to. One of the things that we really, really need mm-hmm. to come together on is to realize that we have to send out a message to the rest of the world mm-hmm. that we can't do everything for everybody. People have asked the United States for everything ever since the 1790s. And yeah, because we're the big dream. We're the dream of the planet. Everybody wants to come here because it's better than what they believe they have. And one of the things we have not done, as we talk about why is it we're going to tighten up things internally in the United States, remember, we have to explain to the American people that that if we accommodate immigrants, legal or illegal, mm-hmm. In the economic strata to take the best jobs, for instance, it means that there will be fewer jobs for right. Native Americans, particularly as technology goes. Who gets the jobs?
There's a price to pay for this.
And we have to rationally discuss who it is that we want to direct those future opportunities to within our country. And then we have to explain to the rest of the world, no, we're going to look out for the people that are here now. They may be people that are here legally now. They may be people that are born here now. They may be people that are here illegally now. But we have to take care of these people first. And yes, if we really wanted to make a grand bargain, one of the things that we would have to do is work with all of the other countries in the areas that are now the current sources mm-hmm. of people influxing into the U.S., which is no longer Europe. It's Latin America and Asia, and work with those countries to say, we need to help you figure out ways to make it so these people don't feel the need to come here. And that is a 100-year job.
That's the crux of it.
It is a job that we really need to start to think about across our political spectrum.
That is the crux of it, and that's what we kind of talked about a little earlier in the program, Dennis, is about, you know, fix the problem where it exists now, which was part of that video I told you about earlier that we talked about, guys. You know, fix the problem where it exists. Don't bring them all here and try to fix the problem here, because you're lowering the whole playing field here is what's happening. You know, I got to tell you all, this immigration, it's not only a sensitive conversation, but it's a very... there's a lot of angst when you talk about this. There's a lot of angst, and you get it's a stress. I mean, I can feel the stress just talking about it, and it's a problem. You know that you want to fix, it's you talk about a wall, Stephen. It's about as tall of a wall as you can get to try to fix this problem of immigration, you know, quite frankly. But here's the thing. It's very concerning to me, and I always wonder why good people can't come together to solve the biggest problems of our life and of the day, of this generation. I worry people. I worry that we'll go down as the most screwed up generation ever if we don't begin to get it together. And I say that not to be a smart guy or wise guy here, but as a fact of matter here. This immigration problem is a major catastrophe that is impacting everybody. Here's what I think in the final word analysis we got to do here. We have to educate people. I don't think people really understand the gravity. Part of what I'm trying to do right here by having you folks on who understand this problem more so is to educate people out there to the highs, the lows, the minuses, the pluses, the possibilities. We're fair and equitable. I mean, we want a fair and equitable compromise to all of this. But, you know, we have to turn the lights on in the room. What that means is, back to again, where FDR used to do it, Reagan used to do it, turn the lights on, have Trump get to the camera, talk to the American people. We need a conversation from that Oval Office to the American people. We need a fireside chat or a camera chat or a go out on the beach with your swim trunk chat. Whatever the hell it is, you need a chat here. And you need to speak directly to the American people. And I think we've got to explain this problem in full daylight, people, to all of us, so we understand the gravity of it. What I'm saying is, we're being held hostage by the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. We're being held hostage. America is being held hostage, people. Get that through your head. We're being held hostage. And you folks out there that continue to elect the same clowns again and again and again, and finally we're starting to see some of that swamp drain. Some of the Republicans and some of the rhinos and some of the Demorats and the rest of them are starting to leave Washington like cockroaches, hopefully, in the midst of the night, right? But that's we've got to have a bigger conversation. And they can't hold us hostage anymore. So it's really going to take you out there, you, to impact this through your congressman and your representative and your senators. You've got to get to the politicians, and you've got to demand. These are demands the American people have to demand. No longer can we just suggest, but we need to demand representation at the highest level and at the local level. And we need to demand what's right, because that's what's got to happen here. We got to turn the lights on. We got to get that chat. I would encourage the president to talk directly to the American people. Open up the conversation. Let the American people know. And you know what? And the politicians who are the cockroaches, quite frankly, and the ones who are swarming the most, you know what? They can get on their horses and ride them the hell out of town, or get on their back of their cockroach, whatever they want to do. I don't care. Call it whatever you want, people. But I think, listen, I call it as it is. That, to me, is the out loud truth, is it's time to bring it to a head. And I put the light where it counts, and those who don't want to fix it and exasperate the problem, well, then let's call them out for who they are. Whoever they are, I don't care who they are. Democrats, Republicans, independents, communists, pick your poison, people. They're all the same. They're called politicians. They're corrupt as the day is long. Time to do something about it. Time to demand representation, demand the president have this conversation with the American people. He can figure this out. He knows immigration. He knows it's a problem. He knows it's killing our country. This is the biggest problem of our lifetime, friends, I'm telling you. Listen, we will continue on with the conversation here on Viewpoint Presents with this 10-part series. Tremendous thank you to Dr. Stephen Steinleit, Holly McKay, Dennis Santiago. All right, so we're going to continue on with some of the deepest topics. Again, the elections, gun control, there's another hot one. I think it's a big topic, but probably not as big as immigration, quite frankly. Climate change. Terrorism, the deep state, the Orwellian state, and even the screwed up state, huh? That's about what we have some days. I know, but that's about what we got some days. You know, nobody really wants to call it as it is, and I just prefer we get to the truth and we get to it quickly so we can identify the problem, fix the problem, do something about it, friends. That's what I'm all about here. Thank you for being part of this with Viewpoint Presents, and you'll catch the whole series back at AmericaOutloud.com. Friends, you can email us at talk@AmericaOutloud.com. And remember, the Out Loud truth continues back at AmericaOutloud.com.